Over the last 2 weeks, associate producer Logan Finney has been looking into funding mechanisms, IT support, and cybersecurity for the courts.
This year, Idaho's judicial branch is requesting general funds for its IT staff and services, and to complete the court's transition to a cloud-based technology system. For the last 10 years, the state has largely funded the court technology system by imposing fees on the people who use the criminal justice system. Last week on the show, Sarah Omundson, administrator for the state courts, explained the judicial branch budget request, and on Wednesday of this week, I spoke to Lisa Foster of the Fines and Fees Justice Center about problems with the current fee-based funding setup.
I'm Lisa Foster. I am the co-founder and co-executive director of Fines and Fees Justice Center. We are a national organization focused on the reform of fines and fees in the American legal system.
Before we started recording, I told you about the Idaho's Court Technology Fund, which is funded in a large part through fees paid on criminal and civil filings. First, just for context, can you tell me what's the difference between a fine and a fee and their role in the criminal justice system?
Sure. So a fine is a monetary sanction imposed for violating a law. They have an ancient history. They go back hundreds of years to before Magna Carta, and they were intended as an alternative to incarceration. So we're all familiar with a traffic ticket. You go a little too fast, you get a ticket. There's a fine that's meant to punish and deter you from speeding again. That's what a fine is. A fee, by contrast, is really much more like a tax. What it's doing is funding government, government programs, sometimes the courts themselves, sometimes just general revenue through the justice system. So it's a tax imposed only on people who happen to touch the criminal legal system. We have fees depending on the state, and every state is different, for everything from an arrest warrant through a phone call when you're in jail and at every point in between. And they really are a way of raising revenue for state and local government.
I kind of already know the answer to this question, but does your organization believe that's a good way of funding the services in government?
No, and emphatically no. And there are lots of reasons for that, but the principal one is government should pay for government work. And by that, we mean the justice system is a core government function. The rule of law is what distinguishes the United States from virtually every other country on the planet. And it's essential to government. We couldn't have a vibrant business sector without an effective justice system. We couldn't be safe as a community without an effective justice system. The system doesn't just serve the people who are in it. It serves the whole community, just as the executive branch and the legislative branch serve the whole community. So in our view, the justice system should be paid for by the whole community. And that's particularly true, obviously, in places where the revenue is going directly into a city's general fund or to a state's general fund, where they really are no different than a tax. And the question is, why should just people who happen to need the justice system or be forcibly engaged with the justice system be the ones who are paying a larger share for government than everybody else?
One of the details in this conversation is that when the fees were added, give or take 10 years ago, it was expected that they would increase over time and kind of cover the cost of inflation. But what the courts have actually seen is the number of those cases has gone down. So they're actually getting less from those filing fees. Is that surprising to you?
No. And first off, it also underscores a problem with this approach. Because when you raise revenue through fees, what you're essentially saying, and to be specific to this program, court technology is going to be funded by fees imposed on people who, for example, get traffic tickets or are convicted of misdemeanors or felonies. You are relying on people committing more crime to fund government. That's not good public policy. We want to discourage people from committing more crimes. And that trend downward is a good thing that we should be celebrating. But what it really demonstrates is that fees are an unreliable funding source for many reasons. First of all, it depends on a police officer stopping someone and arresting someone. It depends on a prosecutor deciding that's a good case and we're going to charge that person. It depends on the person being convicted. And it also depends on the person who is convicted having the ability to pay those fees. And that's, for us, a critical problem, because the reality is many people don't have the ability to pay those fees on top of the fine that's imposed and provide for themselves and their families. I mean, we know today people are strapped. Inflation is higher than it should be. It's been high for a long time. People have a lot of needs. Wages are up slightly, but they're not keeping up enough with inflation. And so people are struggling and unable to pay everything that government is now imposing on them. So all those factors combine to make fees an unreliable funding source, as well as one that, from a moral or ethical standpoint, in our view, is wrong.
And going,
let me just add one thing. The pandemic has definitely had a huge impact on the both the imposition and collection of fines and fees. First of all, of course, courts were shut down for a period of time during the pandemic. Fewer people were on the road, so there are far fewer traffic tickets being written across the country. Fewer people were filing lawsuits, to the extent that there are civil filing fees that may be involved. So all of the court's business shrank some. And we are seeing, as I said, a good trend, and that is a decrease in actual crime in most places, including in Idaho. And so that impacts the system's ability to raise revenue this way. We think the courts are right about this one. This is not the right way to do it. It should be funded out of general revenue.
Part of why I'm doing this coverage is the Finance Appropriations Committee is doing a lot of the court budget writing last week and this week, and they're pretty receptive to it. But looking over the numbers, the court and the Chief Justice like to say the courts only account for 1% of the general fund spending for the entire state. They're very proud of that fact. But when we looked at the court budgets as a whole, it was approximately 70 to 75% comes from general fund to fund the system as a whole. Do you think, I guess my question is, compared to other states, how does that compare, that we're approximately 70% general fund compared to other sources of revenue?
So I can't honestly answer that question because it varies so much from state to state. There are states, for example, in Florida, where the state provides funding for judges' salaries, it provides funding for buildings, it provides funding for the court, for most of the court, except the clerks and the people who are staffing the courts. And those are entirely funded out of fines and fees. So it's difficult to compare states because of the way every state does its budgeting differently, and every state relies on fines and fees differently. What we know is that increasingly states are turning to general fund revenue to fund their courts, even if they relied on fees in the past. So a good example is California, which had a host of fees for everything from public defenders to probation to electronic monitoring that they allowed counties to impose, because in California, counties were participating in funding courts. And they've eliminated all of those fees, now upwards of 70 some odd of them. and replace that with general revenue, because it's not a reliable funding source and they recognize the harm it causes to individuals and communities. And let me just give you what for me is an important kind of analogy. If the legislature itself, right, thought it needed a new computer system, right, so that they could manage constituent mail and they could have intermember communications that were stronger or whatever their technology needs were, it would never occur to them to impose a fee on the people who come into the building to meet with their legislators in order to fund that technology system. But somehow we think it's okay with the courts. And there really is no difference. If the legislature needs a new technology system to do its business, it should be paid for with general revenue. The same is true in the executive branch, and the same is true for the courts. So the courts are right, in our view, to be going to the legislature and saying, we need revenue to do this and to do it well, because we need this technology to do business better for the people of the state of Idaho.
And just having the frame of reference that other states are also kind of looking at the same trend is very helpful.
Absolutely.
You mentioned kind of going back to Magna Carta days that imposition of fines is kind of conceived of as an alternative to imprisonment as a punishment. I'm curious, do you remember there was a Supreme Court case here in Idaho a couple years ago? It was the Beck case.
Yes, I know it well.
You guys were
we were amicus, right?
This brief on that. Could you maybe talk to me about that case? We don't have to talk about Ms. Beck in super specific.
Sure.
I think that really illustrates the issue there.
It absolutely does. So in that case, Ms. Beck, convicted of a minor offense, misdemeanor, fines and fees are imposed. She's at the time working part-time at a Burger King. The court did not agree to waive all of her fines and fees, but put her on what seemed at the time like a reasonable payment plan, right? So she had a monthly amount that she had to pay to the court. But 2 weeks after that case, she lost her job entirely. She had no income. And so she couldn't make those payments to the court and didn't. And what happened in her case is what was happening apparently in many cases in Idaho. The clerk wrote out a warrant for her arrest for violating the court's order to pay those fines and fees. And some months later, she was actually arrested in another county, taken into jail, spent a week in jail before she could get transferred back to the county where she had been convicted. The judge convicted her of contempt, which means violating the judge's court order to pay, imposed exactly the same fines and fees and exactly the same payment plan, which was obvious she couldn't pay. She had no source of income. And the Idaho Supreme Court said, that's unconstitutional under both the Idaho Constitution and the US Constitution. And the reason is because you cannot, the US Supreme Court told us back in 1983, that you cannot imprison someone for non-payment of a fine or fees unless you first determine that they did it willfully. That is, they have the money in their pocket. They are just saying, I'm not paying, right? And if someone is in that position, then you can put them in jail if you need to convince them that they need to pay what they owe and they can afford to pay. But that wasn't the case with Ms. Beck. No one, before they arrested her, knew what her financial circumstances were. And the court said, you can't issue arrest warrants for people who don't pay fines and fees until you make that determination that their conduct was willful. And that applies whether you arrest them outright in the first place, where you just say, we're arresting you for not paying, or you do what the courts were doing, which is kind of a subterfuge, saying we're calling it contempt of a court order. We're not arresting you because you didn't pay. We're arresting you because you violated our order to pay, which amounts to the same thing, right?
Yeah, that's a fun nuance.
Yeah, it's a distinction without a difference. And they, but that's what the court basically said. They said you can't, you have to send Ms. Beck and all the people like Ms. Beck in the world who haven't paid a notice and tell them that they need to come to court because you need to determine whether they have the ability to pay this. And then if you don't, you should be waiving or reducing what they owe. And in our view, that's absolutely right, both as a matter of constitutional law and for common sense. I mean, what it doesn't help hold someone accountable. It doesn't help punish or deter someone to ask them to do something they cannot possibly do. And if someone doesn't have enough money to provide a shelter over their heads or put food on their table for themselves and their family, they can't make the kinds of payments that the courts are asking of them.
One final question before I let you go. You guys also issued a report, universal surcharges and assessments?
Correct.
And that caught my eye because Idaho was on the list of, it was Idaho and Oregon who don't have any.
Don't do it.
Oregon had one and repealed it, but it's my understanding Idaho has never had one. Can you explain kind of the framing of that report and what Idaho's doing right?
Sure. What we were really looking at are fees that principally go to a general fund or that that universally apply to all kinds of convictions. So traffic, misdemeanors, felonies, and that are not for a kind of specific purpose, but an overall, just this is the fee we're charging for kind of catch-all things. And we were also looking in that report at fees that went to victim compensation funds, which Idaho also doesn't do. And it is unusual. So I'll give you a couple of examples. Nevada now has for many years has an assessment on every traffic ticket, every felony, every misdemeanor. That money used to go to, until a year ago, actually, about 10 different places. Some of it went to the Attorney General's office to fund a domestic violence program. Some of it went to the court to fund the Supreme Court's budget. Some of it went to law enforcement to fund a database. California has a huge assessment. Every traffic, every misdemeanor, every felony conviction. It goes to 26 California state agencies, including the Fish and Game Service. New York has what they call a surcharge, but an assessment. Again, every traffic ticket, every misdemeanor, every felony, that money goes straight to the New York General Fund. It, just like your income taxes do, just like anything else does. Those were what we were looking at. And they developed over the last really 30, 40 years in the United States as states were looking for ways to raise revenue without raising taxes, income tax or property tax or sales tax, the principal ways that government, state and local governments raise money. And they, those are what we were comparing across the country. And yes, Idaho was the only state that had never done that. And we applauded the state because it's the right policy. Idaho, actually, the legislature seems to understand that this is not an effective way to raise revenue and it's not a fair way to raise revenue. And so we did give a shout out to Idaho and to Oregon for realizing it a little bit later. And looking for other more reliable, more effective, and fairer ways of funding government.
Okay. Thank you, Lisa.
You're welcome.
Yeah, I guess, is there anything else you think our lawmakers and policymakers should be aware of as they're thinking about court sustainability in the years to come?
So I also think when legislators look to fees, they often don't think about the collateral costs that come from imposing those fees. And that's both the cost to the system. So somebody has to collect those fees. That takes staff time and energy. It may be You have to pay a private company to collect those fees. There may be, if as Idaho was, if you're using warrants, there's a police officer's time and energy involved. There's more court time and energy involved. Those are all costs that you have to consider in when you're thinking about revenue and may not have been considered when the legislature imposed the fee for technology. And the second thing is the cost to the community and to individuals. We want people to thrive. We want our communities to prosper. And the when we take our poorest communities who are already disproportionately in the justice system, and we impose on them a greater responsibility for funding government, we are perpetuating and exacerbating poverty, and we are keeping people from being able to reach their full potential and our communities to reach their full potential. And that's especially true for people who, for example, are coming back into their home community after a period of being incarcerated. We all know that we do a terrible job of reintegrating people who have done their time and come back to their communities. And if we want to do that, saddling people with a whole lot of debt when they come out is not going to be a helpful strategy. So those are other things to think about when we think about trying to raise revenue this way. Idaho's on the right track. They should look at all of the fees and really think about how can we over time eliminate all of them.
Okay. Well, Lisa Foster, thanks so much. I appreciate your perspective.
Thank you, Logan.
On Friday morning, the Joint Finance Appropriations Committee set the judicial budget. Lawmakers granted most of what the court is asking for, except for new field technicians in each of the 7 judicial districts. Those positions assist the local courts with technology. The budget committee approved 2 of the 7 positions the courts have requested. The appropriation now goes to the full legislature.